It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Hour number 2 of the Drive underway in the Top 4 at 4, brought to you this afternoon by Knoxville Smiles. Here's, almost called him Jake Miller. Said you have that Red Bull run here in just a sec. It wouldn't have been that big an insult.
No, it's true.
It would have been a common mistake. What is your name? Marcus Young.
Marcus Young.
Thank you, Russell. Number one, D. Beckwith has made a destination for his transfer, as the former Tennessee running back has chosen to go to the Kentucky Wildcats. After entering the portal in January, he is a former former three-star recruit out of high school, spent 2 seasons with Tennessee, bouncing around a handful of positions before settling at running back. He played in 3 games while still redshirting his freshman year.
Good luck to him in every game except for when they play us. I hope it works out for him, and I hope he has a successful career up there.
He had 4 carries for 27 yards as a Tennessee career, and he actually has 4 years of eligibility at Kentucky due to the NCAA's COVID-19 relief.
Oh yeah, he's got a corona.
Yeah, so
he
has an opportunity to make something of it.
How many years?
4.
He's got 4 years? Oh, because he redshirted.
In 1 season. And you get an extra year. So because of the redshirt, he would have had 3.
But wait, if you redshirt during the corona year, mm-hmm. which would have been his, like, you get the extra year still?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Loopholes.
It's good for him, man. I'll be somewhat relieved. It'll make our
super
work
seniors
easier
are done.
When they've all matriculated and we just get back to 4 years in a redshirt year.
You got 5 to play 4.
I can remember that. I've just sort of given up on like trying to remember what year is.
Isn't there like a graduate year too that some people have?
Well, you can get a medical hardship. Normally you have 5 years to play 4 years. You got 4 years of eligibility, and then you've got another year where you can redshirt. And then a couple of Tennessee guys have gotten them. They usually don't make a big impact, but like hardship injury.
Yeah, the 6th year.
Who was our center that we had that had an extra year? Or is that due to COVID? I can't think of his name for the life of me, but we were pretty excited.
Basketball or?
No, center for the offensive line.
Carvin is back. He's been here for a while now.
Darrell Middleton allegedly has at least a year, if not 2, of eligibility left.
Maybe it's Carvin I'm thinking of. I don't know. I'll think of it later.
Do you realize how old he is?
Middleton or
yeah,
Carvin?
We've talked about this several times on the show. He originally committed to Dooley.
Yeah. 10 years ago.
Number 2, Serena Williams, on the future of her Wimbledon loss that she had yesterday, has stated that that's a question that I can't answer. I don't know. Who knows where I'll pop up. After her 7-6 loss to France's Harmony Tan on Tuesday, the 23rd time Grand Slam champion is unsure if she will come back to Wimbledon specifically. Though she has teased that maybe, I think there's one that's happening in the States that she might, a match.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want your last major appearance to be a loss to you know, in the first round against.
Wow, I mean, but that's how
some French broad
that. Whoa, that's how these things happen.
Like
was she French? I thought she was like
South
Korean.
From France.
Oh, she. All right. That's how these things start. I don't want to go out like that, and then the next thing you know, you're 40 years old trying to recapture your former athletic glory, and all you're really doing is tarnishing your image.
Yeah, not everybody
maybe
can go out like...
maybe she shouldn't have come back.
Bettis and Peyton.
Brady, yeah.
Brady ain't gone yet.
What do you mean about... Well, yeah.
Bettis retired on a Super Bowl win, so did Peyton.
Yeah, that's true.
Last game they played, they won.
By the way, did you see Harmony Tan, the girl that beat her, what she did today?
No.
It was controversy at Wimbledon.
What'd she do?
Well, she withdrew. She's playing on the doubles side, too. And she withdrew from her match, citing a thigh injury an hour before it was to begin today.
Okay.
And her partner, Tamara Korpach is very upset about it. Says, let me wait here 1 hour before the match starts. I'm very sad, disappointed, also angry that I can't play my first doubles grand slam. It's not fair to me.
No, but I mean, she just went like 3 hours plus with Serena Williams.
I will say Serena Williams also had a doubles partner that dropped out. Maybe they could work together.
There you go. I don't know, Bear. I was always told, I was raised, when you say you're going to do something, you do it. You give your word. You're going to be there. You got people depending on you. I'm kind of with Miss Korpach. It's not very fair to her.
I don't think Tan realized that she was probably going to be playing after Serena's match.
Should have thought about that. Got responsibilities. This is not ain't non bear. There are rules. You got give your word. You say you're going to do something. You got to do it. It's an outrage.
All right.
Yeah, I'm outraged about the women's doubles tennis draw at Wimbledon. That's where we are. Go ahead, Marcus.
If you're outraged about that, can't wait to hear about this. Number three, Nelson Piquet apologizes for making a racial.
Spare me the phony outrage.
Piquet. Thank you. Senior.
Okay.
Apologizes for making a racial slur about Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm.
Did he use the one I think he used?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
A formal.
Definite emphasis on the last letter.
Hard R, he wasn't just quoting a random rap lyric that was taken out of context?
No, he was specifically talking about Lewis Hamilton and the controversy with last year's
Verstappen
race dust-up with his future son-in-law, Max Verstappen.
The 69-year-old, talking about Hamilton, blaming him for his collision with Max Verstappen, the boyfriend of his daughter, Kelly, and last year's British Grand Prix. The comments were made in Portuguese on a podcast last November, but only came to light this week. He tweeted in response.
Wait. He said the N-word on a podcast?
Yeah, last December.
What are you doing?
And they didn't edit it out for him either.
Yes. Good.
No, I agree.
But
how does it – that was done in like November, December. How is it only coming out now? Or coming to light now, I should
probably
say.
Because they don't have a very big following.
Nobody listened to it.
Yeah, and then somebody finally somebody heard it.
Well, that happens. I listen to a lot of podcasts where it's like, oh, this guy was on this podcast from like 2 years ago. I'll go ahead and listen to it.
Oh yeah, do that all the time.
Somebody was listening to it and was like, whoa,
somebody understood Portuguese.
Get a load of this dude. Wait a minute, he said it in Portuguese?
Yeah.
Wait,
So
hold on, I'm confused now.
So
is there a translation for that word in Portuguese?
It's a direct yes.
Yeah.
Does it carry all the does it carry the same? Because it's different.
Yeah.
Like,
no. It's the same.
Like our word is unique. It's just as bad. Has the same connotations and historical.
It's their word for
the word.
So the word.
Here's what he said.
Please don't say it.
I'm not going to say it.
Yes.
I'm going to read his apology.
Jobs, Marcus.
I'm going to read his apology. He issued a statement and apology claiming the word does not have a racial connotation in Brazil. I would like to clear the story circulating in the media about a comment I made in an interview last year. What I said was ill thought out, and I make no defense for it. But I will clarify that the term used is one that has widely and historically been used in Brazilian Portuguese for a synonym for guy or person. It was never intended to offend. I would never use that word I have been accused of in some translations. I don't know if I buy that.
I don't know if I do either. But I don't know if I dismiss it either. Like, this is...
See, here's the thing. Why I absolutely do not believe it is because I'm familiar. You know, I've watched it for years. And that whole camp, along with Red Bull and Max Verstappen and Helmut Marko and
Verstappen.
There's been an undercurrent of some really ugly stuff that's been directed at Hamilton. Now, Hamilton, he's a social justice warrior for sure. I mean, he speaks his mind about stuff, but yeah, there's been like an undercurrent of.
It's no excuse to use that, to use a racial slur to describe him, but I would think that, I don't know. I feel like this is one of those things where you come out real hard and say, oh, man, this guy's a terrible person, and then you realize that maybe there is something to what he's saying. It, you know, context matters. And if he wasn't using it as a slur or a put-down, he's not, being racist, then he probably doesn't deserve what's going to happen to him. But I don't know, so I will withhold judgment.
Facing what? He's facing a lifetime ban.
Yes.
From Formula One.
And how old is he? 69?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And quickly, finally,
how long does he have left? Well, let's be honest.
I don't know. But the whole family, they've been caught up in so many controversies.
And quickly, finally, at number four, Roy Williams, Jim Calhoun, among five different coaches who will be headed to the College Basketball Hall of Fame. They will join John Boleyn and Lon Kruger in a
Beeline. What Beeline? Is that guy's name? Beeline, right?
Beeline. Beeline. Beeline, yeah.
John Beeline. And
he got caught up in a quasi. Didn't he use the word thug in a.
I do remember that, actually.
Was or something else, but it was one of those, like, old white guy.
Not a good word.
Addressing his primarily African-American young basketball team in a way he probably shouldn't kind of thing when he was with the Cavs.
Yeah.
Yeah. They joined Lon Kruger as well, and the cast of coaches who will be inducted into the Hall of Fame in November. They also will join Jerry Krause, a longtime coach of Eastern Washington, along with players Richard Hamilton, Larry Miller, Frank Selvey, and Jimmy Walker.
Was that the deal with LeBron and his guys? Is that where that came up?
I feel like it may have been.
Is that Jerry Krause from the Bulls?
See, I wondered that too, but it says that he was a longtime coach for Eastern Washington. But
he wasn't a coach, was he?
He was a GM, and a terrible GM.
Yeah, he did preside over like six championships, but
he's the reason why
he blew up
apart.
The team. Yeah, felt disrespected. Egos got involved. All right. Thank you, Marcus.
Yeah, it doesn't show him being a coach for it must be a different one.
Another Jerry Krause in the world of basketball. Who'd have thought? That is the Top 4 at 4. It's brought to you by our friends at Knoxville Smiles. You can check them out online at knoxvillesmiles.com. If it's been a while since you've been to the dentist, if you've been putting it off, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get it taken care of tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. Stop that. Prioritize your dental health. I mean, this is America. It's not Great Britain. You ought to have good teeth, right? Call Knoxville Smiles. Tell them Fan Run Radio sent you. They'll hook it up, whether you need a routine dental exam and cleaning, or perhaps you need wisdom tooth removal, perhaps you need a restorative procedure, something a little bit more involved, fillings, crowns, bridges, veneers, things of that nature. They also do implants right there at their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility on South Peters Road. There's no going to your dentist in one office, and then he says, oh, yeah, you want to get this procedure, you need to go to this other office all the way across town. No, they do it all right there at Knoxville Smiles. It's where I go to get my dental work done, and it's where you should go to get your dental work done. Let them know we told you about it. Call them at 865-539-1776 to set up your appointment today at Knoxville Smiles. You could also set it up online at knoxvillesmiles.com. Coming up, just a few moments, we'll be joined by Mike Griffith of the AJC and DogNation.com, the former University of Tennessee football beat writer for the Knoxville News Sentinel. He's covered Michigan State, Alabama. He's been all over the place, all around good guy. We like having Griff on. He helps stir it up occasionally. Had an interview with Jeremy Pruitt earlier this week that has been getting some viral attention in the Southeast.
Cornbread.
The Jeremy Pruitt image rehab tour continues. And get his thoughts on what is the future like for Jeremy Pruitt? Is there any path for him back to the world of college football?
All right.
Also, just enjoy getting Griff's thoughts on Tennessee and where the Vols are at coming in a year two under Big Josh Heupel. Almost 60 days away now. For season
60?
Two of the Josh, 60-ish, give or take a day. I don't know. It's too early for me to start counting down the individual days. We get down to like a week or two, then I'll start playing that game. Until then, I'm not going to be the guy. It's 48 days until football time in Tennessee. Like, it's 48 days. That's 7 weeks.
Didn't
we
do the player thing 1 year?
That's what are we doing?
We talked about whoever the number was.
We? Like, this show?
I think so.
No, no.
We never did that?
No, I would never do something like that. No offense to those who do. It's just, come on, we can do a little bit better than that, right?
Surely. Sure.
Maybe we can't. Maybe we can't. Maybe we should adopt the full-on Big Orange Football countdown content creation method. Get a sponsor for it and everything. Just lead the show with it. It'll be our thing. 865-546-8200, your number. Looks like Big Frank Anderson is staying in Knoxville. I'm hearing that Texas might not be the only job he turned down.
Really?
Yeah. He might have gotten some nibbles from the big leagues.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I think at his point in his career, and he's been quoted as saying he doesn't want to be a head coach again. I think this year somebody asked him, and he said, unless the New York Yankees calls like one of those kind of tongue-in-cheek things, he doesn't want to be the head coach. He was a head coach at Oklahoma State for a couple of years in the Big 12. And he owned some property near Austin, Texas. He coached there for a while. I think that's where he's probably going to retire to someday. So I'm sure, like, Texas throws around big boy money, like, it's probably something
you got to look at. Yeah,
you listen to it. If it's, I don't know if he considers that home, but he's got some roots there. I consider that. But I think at the end of the day, your project here, you got unfinished business here at Knoxville, right? You've got 100%. You got a chance to be a national champion, to build a net from scratch, a program that was completely dormant when you got here. That's got to be exciting.
When you've got three young pitchers who you're not done molding into major league talents yet.
And you've got, I would imagine Vitello is a pretty cool guy to work for. I don't know. Maybe behind the scenes he's a jerk. It just people can't stand him. Not the impression I get, though, from talking to
anybody
players.
Players.
Joyce
anybody
we had on yesterday.
Associated with the program. It would be cool to see Frank Anderson being like, major league manager and then just blowing up. Just big blow up with an umpire.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So that's big news. Another win for Tony Vitello off the field this week here in Big Orange Country. Let's go ahead and get our break here. When we continue, Mike Griffith joins the festivities. We'll talk college football with Griff next right here on Fan Run Radio. All right, back here on The Drive, it's Fan Run Radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. Streaming live, fanrunradio.com, and your free Fan Run app. A variety of ways for you to experience the program this afternoon. And our buddy Mike Griffith from the AJC, DogNation.com, joining us this afternoon on the show. Griff, what's up?
Hey, Ben Russell, all good.
Hey, man, good to hear your voice. Summer treating you well so far?
Been a busy one. Staying busy, obviously, but, you know, busy's good in our craft.
Yeah, man, you got to pump out that content, and got an interview with Jeremy Pruitt. What's he doing? Did you just call him up and ask him to chat, or do you get that he's trying to do some sort of like college football image rehab thing right now?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know he did a show in Atlanta Friday, so I just sent him a text message and asked him to come on and talk about Georgia. You know, what he learned from Tennessee, his thoughts on the NIL. You know, you look at Jeremy's background. I mean, there's a reason Tennessee hired him. I mean, I guess, you know, everybody can look in the rearview mirror and complain about every coach that didn't work out. But, you know, this guy's qualified. I mean, he's coached under Saban for many years. He coached under Jimbo Fisher, won a national championship as a defensive coordinator there, won a national championship as a defensive coordinator at Alabama. You know, played football at Alabama under Gene Stallings, kind of learned how the way of the bear while playing for Gene. And, you know, Jeremy's a great defensive mind. You know, all things aside, things obviously didn't work at Tennessee, but went up coached for the Giants for a year, and then that Joe Judge staff got let go. And so Jeremy's back in Fort Payne taking a gap year, and, you know, just kind of spending time with his family. And really, you know, as he said, it's the first time he's really had to spend with his family since he got married. Gosh, I guess it was 8 or 9 years ago he married Casey while he was the D coordinator at Georgia under Mark Riggs. So a year for Jeremy to kind of, you know, reflect and, you know, take that time off before he enters back into the game.
He's also, I guess, the outcome of the NCAA investigation into Tennessee probably bears a lot as far as, like, what he's going to be able to do in college going forward, right?
Well, I would guess. I mean, you know, I don't cover Tennessee. I'm sure all those guys up there have filed, you know, Freedom of Information Act letters. Obviously, if Jeremy's out speaking publicly, there's probably been some sort of settlement. I don't know that for a fact, but, you know, I would guess that. But I'm not aware of it, Russell. I can't tell you, you know, where Jeremy stands with Tennessee or any of that. You know, we didn't get real deep into that. You know, the Georgia audience was more interested in him talking about Kirby Smart, talking about working for Mark Richt, and him talking about the facilities. You know, Jeremy was a big lightning rod at Georgia when he said they needed new facilities. And, you know, Georgia was way behind on facilities. And Jeremy was the guy that spoke up in 2014 and, you know, kind of rattled everybody's cages. And then, you know, and then on my podcast show Monday night, you know, he talked about Georgia playing in Jacksonville and what a disadvantage that is, that Georgia gives up an SEC home game every other year and arguably their biggest game. So, you know, Jeremy's not afraid to put his opinions out there, as you know. He's a pretty straight shooter. And I thought he was pretty insightful. I know our audience really enjoyed him.
We know Pruitt has obviously loyal to Saban, a lot of brand loyalty to Alabama. It's, you know, the state he grew up in and his alma mater. I'd always heard that he and Kirby clashed a little bit. I'm sure they were, you know, rivals for jobs coming up through the ranks and everything. But it struck me in your interview with him, Griff, that he's very complimentary towards Georgia and Kirby Smart. He's very complimentary towards Tennessee. And in the other interview he did, did that stand out to you as something of maybe attempting to mend some fences there? Or do you think he's just trying to get back in the game a little bit and say, hey, you know, he might not be the crazy or bad coach that he might be made out to be by Tennessee fans?
Well, I don't know. He won 8 games in a row at one point. I don't think anybody was saying he was a bad coach then. When they were beating Georgia at halftime with a goal line stand, what was that, 2019?
It was 2020.
Hadn't they won 8 games in a row at that point when they had that goal line stand? So, I mean, you know, look, he took over a tough situation. Butch Jones took over a tough situation. If you want to keep going back at who took over tough situations, it goes back to Lane Kiffin and that nuclear bomb he put down there with that 2-year investigation that, you know, really damaged recruiting, brought a lot of guys in the program that got in trouble. It's funny because there's still a lot of people that kind of glorify Lane's time at Tennessee. I guess he was the best 7-6 coach Tennessee ever had that got him on probation, but that you kind of traced it. But the point is this, look, you know, it's a business. And when we talk about Nick Saban coaches, and you saw this with Jimbo and I talked with Jimbo Fisher down at the SEC spring meetings about it. And I said, you know, how would you classify your relationship with Nick Saban, even at Alabama? Because I was talking with Jacob Hester, who played for LSU, and said, you know, hey, there were times in practice, you know, those guys would go at it. And Jimbo said, look, you know, you got a brother? Do you ever fight with your brother? I mean, he kind of likened it to that. And when Jeremy did the interview the other night, I thought it was interesting. I'd asked him about the Saban tiff with Fisher, and he said, look, those guys got a relationship. They're going to talk. But he said he thought it was key on a coaching staff that everybody shares their opinions. And sometimes they're not going to get along. And sometimes they're going to go nose to nose. I mean, heck, even in, you know, the greatest era, modern era of Tennessee football, I mean, you know, John Chavis and Philip Fulmer didn't always see eye to eye. Now, at the end of the day, you know, Chief knew that Fulmer was the boss. But, I mean, that's part of coaching. So I think sometimes we read into these, you know, relationships with coaches. And, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to realize that everybody works together. I'm sure it's no different in your radio station. You and Bear probably don't always agree on everything, and I may not always agree with my coworkers or bosses, but, you know, part of being a good staff is to be able to have that give and take. And, you know, when things get intense for us on deadline, for them in football games, you know, things can get lit pretty quick.
Mike Griffith of the AJC Dog Nation with us this afternoon on The Drive. Mike, speaking of Tennessee, Josh Heupel's program. You went through the list of guys who were here before and could not get it done. Obviously, still early. The jury's still out on Josh Heupel here at Tennessee. What are your early thoughts as they head into year two for Heupel and the Vols?
Well, I guess I'm going to take get it done as win the SEC championship, okay? Because I know that Butch won a few bowl games in a row and got in the top 25 and, you know, beat some pretty good teams at different times. I know that Coach Heupel last year set some offensive records. So, you know, to me, when I covered Tennessee, the years I was there, the standard was winning the SEC championship. And you know, nowadays with the playoff, if you do that, you're in the playoff. So it's been a long time since, you know, Tennessee's been in that discussion. But I was impressed, obviously. You know, I do the first-year Coach of the Year award along with Coach Spurrier. And when we had our discussions on who was deserving, Coach and I and, you know, Chris Doering, you know, there's a reason Josh Heupel flew down to Gainesville and was at Spurrier's restaurant in February to collect that award along with Shane Beamer. You know, they were co-winners, and they both did great things. You know, Josh beat Beamer head-to-head and obviously had a great season. A really disappointing bowl loss. Still not sure. I don't like to blame referees, but that's probably one of the worst examples of late game officiating I've ever seen that made me skeptical. You know, and then you got to give Beamer credit. You know, he beats North Carolina. He finishes over 500, even though he had to start four different quarterbacks, and he took over a tough situation. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think everybody's bullish on Tennessee right now. I think they're kind of the dark horse team. You know, a lot of people looking at Hendon Hooker led the league in passing efficiency. We mentioned Coach Heupel's offense. You know, he's a real no-nonsense guy. I think he's a really good fit for Tennessee. I think the recruiting has been good. I think the fact that they've changed the state law in Tennessee to make it easier for the collective to be effective, they're taking advantage of the rules. Some people can cry about it all they want, but hey, these are the rules, and it's up to these schools to take advantage of it. And, you know, I think the real key, though, not just Coach Heupel and not just NIL, but I think the real key is you probably got the best administration that you've had since Johnson. I mean, when I look at the school president, you know, when I look at your chancellor, when I look at your athletic director, you know, Coach Fulmer said many times it starts at the top, and I believe that. And I think you've got people running the University of Tennessee right now that know what they're doing. And I think for many years, and I'm not going to mention DePietro and Cheek's names, but I think for many years you didn't have people that knew what they were doing. So now you've got great administration, and I think you're seeing that trickle down. I saw Tennessee won the All-Sports Trophy. I mean, I don't see it stopping, guys. I think there's a lot of momentum in Knoxville.
Griff, you cover Georgia now. Obviously, they are on top of the college football universe coming into 2022. What do they do for an encore? You know, you talk about the post-championship hangover, and I saw where, you know, Pruitt told you, hey, Kirby's been around Saban. He knows how difficult it is to defend a championship. You know, just looking out on paper, it looks like Georgia is going to be right there again as far as having one of the best teams in the country. What do you think the Bulldogs do for an encore this year?
Yeah, they should. You know, they got a lot of key guys back on offense and a major reload on defense. Kirby has recruited well. I do think Todd Monken is a really, really good offensive coordinator. Very efficient offense last year. Maybe not as explosive as they might need to be if they get behind in a game or two. A lot's going to be on that defense. They lost a really great punter. I told Jake Camarda this at the Combine. I said, I haven't seen a punter change games like you since I covered Dustin Colquitt at Tennessee. I thought that Camarda was just a huge weapon. And for the team, for the people that didn't follow Georgia closely, I mean, this guy flipped the field regularly. I think he had four punts inside the 20 against Clemson in that season-opening win. If Georgia doesn't win that game, they're not playing for the national title. We haven't had a two-loss team make the playoff yet. So there's not much margin for error in the SEC, Russell. And, you know, I think a realistic outlook, you know, I think Georgia could win the East. It'd be a great job by Kirby. I've said this before. A lot of people took that wrong. But when you lose 15 guys to the NFL draft, which has never happened, there's never been a team that had 15 guys drafted. And then on top of it, you had four former starters that are in the portal, okay? And then you had seven out of your two deep in the portal. That's a lot of attrition. And if Georgia can come back and win the East again, and as I was telling someone today, it's not just how good Georgia is. It's how good everybody else is, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at South Carolina with Spencer Rattler, and I say, you know what? A quarterback like that gives you a puncher's chance. I look at Tennessee with Hendon Hooker and Heupel, and I say, you know what? If the Vols get hot, play a little defense. I look at Kentucky with Will Levis, a projected first-round pick, and Kentucky has been a more competitive program, even though their quarterback's driving a pickup truck and their basketball players are driving Porsches. I still think Kentucky could be tough, and even though, you know, the Nick Saban starter kit down there in Gainesville seems to be struggling a bit right now, that's a team that probably could have, should have, would have beat Alabama last year. And, you know, was only trailing Georgia 3-0 with 3 minutes left in the first half before Anthony Richardson melted down. So, you know, I think the East is tougher, considerably tougher, and I don't think Georgia's quite as good. So while I would say Georgia's the favorite to win the East, I don't think it's by as wide of a margin as maybe last year.
Griff, last thing, we'll let you out of here. You mentioned the Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban dust up a couple of weeks ago. That really overshadowed a huge story in college football right now, which is SEC schedule. It's going to change the way we look at football in this conference once it expands to 16 teams. And you've had a chance to digest all the different models, the pods, the divisions, the permanent opponents. Do you have a personal preference there or thoughts on which way the powers that be might be leaning in the SEC?
Well, I think first things first, you got to expand the playoff to 12 before you talk about a 9-game schedule, because you don't want to assassinate your chances. I mean, I just mentioned a second ago, there's never been a 2-loss team that's made the playoff. I think 2018 Georgia was one of the 4 best teams, and they didn't get in. So there it is for you right there. As Nick Saban said, you know, if you play a 9-game schedule, it doesn't matter who you are, you're probably playing 5 teams of top 15 ilk. Now, they may not end up ranked in the top 15 because obviously the SEC plays each other and beats each other up. But playing that extra game, I just don't think you can go there until there's a 12-team playoff. I don't know when that's going to be, guys. I'm not sure. You know, we know that the ACC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12, you know, kind of buddied up, and, you know, they're kind of preventing that from happening right now with their little alliance club, their little cupcake alliance club there. They don't want to play with the big boys, so they're going to try to stop the 12-team playoff. And Sankey's like, all right, fine, we'll stick with 4. So I'm not sure if you stick with the 6-1-1. I kind of like, if you're going to make a change right now, I kind of like the 7-1 model, or excuse me, the 1-7 model, right, where you keep the one opponent and you rotate the other 7. That's one way to get around it until you go to the 12-game playoff. I think the 9-game schedule, eventually, I think you could see the, you know, the 3-6 model. You know, and then the argument starts. I mean, you know, who are your 3 teams, right? I mean, I guess if you're Tennessee, you say, all right, we'll take Alabama. Can we have Vanderbilt and Kentucky as the other two? You know, Auburn, you know, if you're Auburn, do you really want to play Georgia and Alabama as 2 out of your 3 permanent opponents? So, you know, there's going to be some fussing and some politics there. Gosh, probably a new head coach there, too, by the end of this year if you look at their schedule. I'll tell you, I'll leave you with this thought. And I know we talk a lot about former coaches, and certainly at Tennessee, you know, it's been a tough run since Coach Fulmer was unceremoniously, prematurely, I also believe, let go within 1 year of going to the SEC championship game. The last time they had an in-person SEC spring meeting was 2019. When we started the meeting this year, Greg Sankey pointed out there's only 4 coaches in the league right now that were at those meetings in 2019. Think about that. 10 out of the 14 jobs have turned over in 3 years in the SEC. This is a brutal, brutal league.
He is Mike Griffith, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Check him out, Dog Nation, dognation.com, at Mike Griffith 32 on Twitter. Griff, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll be hollering at you again here in the near future.
All right. Enjoy the summer, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike Griffith, making his presence felt this afternoon. 3 years ago, there are only 4 survivors from the SEC head coaches.
It's crazy.
I tell you, man, it's like Premier League football. They just, you don't see a guy keep a job more than 3 or 4 years anymore, unless he's just really good. Like they just chew him up, spit him out every 2 or 3 years. New coach. That's the way it's going to be when you got this much money at stake.
Yeah, unless you're winning every year, like.
You can't. The sport has gotten so expensive that these schools cannot afford to lose. Just is weird to think
profound.
About. But that's deep, isn't it? Can't afford to lose. But then you fire your coach, and you got all the dead money.
Let's hope we're out of that now.
It's it compounds. I mean, look at Auburn.
Who are we still paying? Big boy?
Fulmer.
But we're working like heck.
Got that 37 grand instant deposit. Cha-ching.
Steel. We're still paying him.
I think I thought that was done pretty quickly.
Great cash, homie.
Well, they just cut him one big check.
Maybe they are. Maybe they spread that up over 2 years. Are we still paying Kevin Steele?
No. I think he got a check cut.
I mean, it hasn't been 2 years. I think he signed a 2-year deal. We might still be paying him. I still like using the $900,000 as a monetary measurement. One Kevin Steele. $1.8 million is two Kevin Steeles. I believe that's what Vitello gets paid now. He
wonder
gets
how
paid
much
Kevin Steeles.
You think Texas offered Anderson a Kevin Steele?
I would. Yeah, I mean, I would think so.
They're pretty close to one Kevin Steele.
Yep.
It'd be He's hard worth to it. Turn down a Kevin Steele.
Frank Anderson. I mean, if there's any assistant coach in baseball that's worth an entire Kevin Steele, it is Frank Anderson.
Oh, for sure.
Quick break. It is The Drive, Fed Run Radio. We pause for the cause. 865-546-8200. If you want to jump in, take a shot now. Back with more right after this. Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues. Mike Griffith, Bear, what did you learn?
Mike is, I mean, he's still Mike. Love that guy.
Yeah, you didn't answer my question.
What did I learn? He thinks we might have gotten rid of Pruitt too soon. He still thinks that Coach Fulmer was unceremoniously dumped 1 year after going
wait,
to
wait,
the
SEC. I did not hear him say we got rid of Pruitt too soon. That was not my takeaway. Was that it?
I think he was just pointing out that people weren't calling him terrible during that win streak he had over two
seasons.
He's
not lying.
No.
We talked about it yesterday. We went through the whole Hotel Garantano scenario. Henry T makes that stop. We're running off the field. 8 wins. I'd forgot that part. He had an 8-game winning streak.
Yeah, he did.
Well, it was between two seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not, he didn't beat anybody of note. What was his biggest win during that 2-game stretch? At South Carolina to open the 2020 season?
The bowl game, maybe?
Who did Indiana in the bowl game?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeremy Pruitt will always have the dramatic come-from-behind victory over Indiana in the 2019
Gator
Tax Slayer Bowl.
Oh, it was Tax Slayer?
Cornbread.
Wasn't the Gator Bowl even.
I mean, that brilliantly timed onside kick.
Auburn at Jordan-Hare.
It just goes to show it can get away from you quick, man. And Pruitt, try and be fair to Jeremy Pruitt because we always want to be fair. He did not get fired for on-the-field results.
No.
They went 3-7. They were bringing him back with Kevin Steele as his defensive coordinator. Defensive coordinator. They were bringing him back until his shenanigans, shall we say, were exposed.
They really were going to bring him back, weren't they?
Yep. Yeah. They were not going to – Fulmer knew that he was not going to be allowed to hire another head coach. And so he's not going to fire the guy that caused him to lose his job.
No, he just given him a raise like 3 months before, including himself.
Classic Fulmer.
Got a little bit of everything. That's a classic Mike Griffith call.
Griff also a little bit less bullish on Georgia's dominance. And Griff doing his sandbag thing there.
His best Lou Holtz impersonation.
I mean, is there any world where Georgia doesn't win the East this year?
No. Barring some kind of, like, something just that will not happen.
I listen to Griff talk, and it's like, you know, he's talking Florida up a little bit. For all the drama there, I'd forgotten. What did he say? They had somebody – they had a big game, big team on the ropes or something that they ended up – was it LSU that they almost had beat or
– I thought it was – no, hell, it was the cocktail party.
It was 34-7.
Yeah, but right before – that was a really – people don't
got
remember
away
that.
From them right at the end of the first half?
Yeah, like quick. Like they scored – what it was either 14 or 21 points in the last 3 minutes of the second quarter. They had a complete meltdown, dude.
Yeah, it's 34-7. It's an ass kicking. But they are the Florida Gators. And that is the road through which Tennessee's season goes once again. But I have a hard time seeing anybody challenging Georgia for SEC East supremacy this year. That would be a huge upset to me if that were to happen.
Do we feel that I know we've kind of mentioned it before over the week, but do we think Florida's still that must win the game that could define the season?
Yes.
Has been for 30 years, Marcus.
Well, you know, it's a little bit different, I feel like, this time around. Like we talked about before with the second-year head coach. You know, sometimes you want to give them a little leeway, but as Tennessee fans, I know we always want to dominate Florida. It's been a little bit difficult over the last few years.
You say dominate. I would settle for somehow eke out a lucky win against. I don't care.
Is that how you're describing it?
I don't care. I mean, are you picky?
No, not anymore.
I just want to win that game. I don't care, man. I do not care.
I'm not saying this is going to happen, just hypothetical. If somehow we pull off a Hail Mary miracle type of thing against Georgia, but we lose to Florida.
Shouldn't laugh.
If somehow hypothetically we beat Georgia but somehow lose to Florida, would that still be a spot on the season?
I mean, it depends on what happens elsewhere. I mean, we're out in La La Land, but I can get there with you, Marcus. All right, let's do this.
Yeah, I mean,
let's get nuts.
Did you expect that Hail Mary to work with Dobbs and Jennings?
I didn't see it live.
I did.
No, but...
miracles can happen. I've seen the movie Miracle on Ice.
Do it live.
We'll do it live!
I mean, it depends on what happens in the other games. Like, if you go 9-3 and one of those wins is against Georgia, yeah, 9-3 is a terrific season by any measure to me this year. A win over Georgia, assuming that they are who we think they were, they're like a top five team. Yeah, that's
be killer.
That's a season maker.
I love it.
That's a season maker. That would wash away a lot of hurt that another loss to Florida could create.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather beat Florida this year just because this is a chance to push their – and I hate Georgia, but just to hold Florida's head underwater.
Florida had Alabama on the ropes last year before they went – that's right, down there in the swamp.
That was a good game.
Yeah, that's right. Man, that
thing – they played us the next week, right?
Florida?
Did they play us the week before they played Bama?
Yeah, they played Tennessee the week after they played Bama. Because, like, looking back on it, it's very easy to say, oh, you know, maybe Tennessee let one get away. But this is what I'm talking about with Marcus. And, like, you know, all 9-3s are not created equal. It's just how you get there, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not – I know this sounds like a cop-out because you are what your record says you are. But sometimes you're really not. And –
I felt like last year, if we played them at the end of the season, we would have housed them.
Well, yeah, you go back to mid-September coming off that game, and keep in mind, like, Tennessee, I think Hooker just made his first start, right?
Right.
Milton was hurt. against Pitt. Hooker played the rest of that game, and then he played – it was against Tennessee Tech, and then we played Florida in the Swamp.
Yeah.
And Florida had just gone toe-to-toe with Alabama, almost pulled off a dramatic come-from-behind win against, at that time, the number one team in the country. And so we're going down there thinking, wow, I mean, like, we're still trying to find ourselves. Nobody expected to beat Florida last year at that time. But, yeah, if you played them at the end of the year, maybe it was a different story. Or if you want to be hypercritical of Josh Heupel, if he had just identified Hendon Hooker as his starting quarterback from spring practice and had made him the man through summer camp and all of fall camp, and he had been the starter against whoever we opened up with the season last year, it just had been the guy, Bowling Green.
Bowling Green.
It would have been, yeah, Tennessee probably, it would have been a shootout.
Yeah.
But maybe they could have pulled it out down there. Would have been a different game.
Could have, should have, would have.
Ifs and buts. Ifs and buts, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up, hour number three, young Marcus Young. We'll have the top five at five. Those of you just joining us, get you caught up on everything going on around your world of sports. There's a Ben Affleck son backed a Lamborghini into a Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, I saw that.
That is the most celebrity culture headline I could possibly imagine right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, letting the your seven-year-old son have the keys to your Lambo. What are you doing?
I didn't realize he was just seven.
Ten.
No. Well, that's a huge stuff.
That's a big difference, right?
Yeah.
You're a 10-year-old at a luxury vehicle rental dealership. 10-year-old son gets the keys to the Lambo. And I guess, what if you're Affleck, do you just write a check? Do you just hand over your card, say, here, do what you got to do?
Probably the check.
Vehicle was a Lamborghini Urus.
Urus?
It's a big giant SUV looking thing.
Rents for $1,475 per day. It can be purchased for just $250,000.
Oh.
What are you renting? Who's renting a Lambo like that?
I mean, apparently there's a company in Vegas and yep, obviously one in LA, but they do crazy business.
Mm-hmm. They do like renting and they drive through like the long stretch of roads and
yeah,
in Nevada.
Yeah. But now there's certain cars like Lamborghinis you can't really rent Lamborghinis. So most Lamborghinis you can't drive when it's over a certain temperature.
You got one of those, you got Lambo money, rent, or like just buy. I don't know. Not my world. 777 Exotics is the rental dealership.
Yeah.
They say there's, quote, no hard feelings following the fender bender. Affleck loves cars, the dealership employee said. We hope they come in again. Translation, I got some commission coming my way. Ben Affleck.
Well, it's also a good way for people like that to try something out before they spend $250,000.
Before they let their 10-year-old drive it.
He's back with Jennifer Lopez. Is that his
yeah,
latest
J-Lo,
thing?
Yeah.
Good for him. Nice. Yeah.
The kids, what's his? Garner. Jennifer Garner. His ex.
Mm. He can't just date like a normal. He can't date like a nurse or something. Can't he? It's got to be another celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only kind of personality he can possibly identify with. Very unlike. I've always found Ben Affleck very unlikable, even before he became like the guy smoking the cigarette and the meme thing.
Did you see
never
that?
Liked him. Even like Good Will Hunting.
Just about The Accountant.
Never seen it. What's that?
That's not bad.
That's good. One of his best movies. Plays this real high functioning, spoiler alert, autistic guy who's keeps track of like the world's most dangerous people's money. It's kind of the premise behind it.
Okay. It's got my interest.
And he's very, very autistic.
I think you want your accountant to be autistic. You don't want your accountant to be what? You don't want your accountant to be like super emotional guy. You want him to be a just black and white numbers by the book dude. What, Marcus? You know, it's true.
That was the whole premise of the movie that was why he was dealing because he could figure out who was. He could look at complex numbers and see where the money's being stolen.
I want some crazy, emotionally overreactive guy in charge of my bank account.
I want a human computer.
Exactly. I want freaking Rain Man. All right, Marcus. He's got the top five coming up here in just a second. Hour number three of The Drive on the way. Stay with us. We're back with more right after this.